Happy Tuesday. Thank you so much for coming. Look at all that love. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for coming to the third episode of Aramete Aventions. My name is Mark Killens. I'm the CMO over at Aramete. Again, really appreciate you coming. Get those emojis fired up, the chat going. Hello, Eric. Good to see you again. I'm going to bring our two special guests to the stage very, very soon. I just want to do a couple housekeeping things. If you've missed the first two episodes of Aventions, you can go check them out on the landing page. We'll put the link in the chat so you have that handy. This is the third one out of six. I heard that we will probably be extending it for a few more episodes after that last current sixth one. So stay tuned for that. More to come. But let's bring on the guests. We're going to have a really interactive conversation today. Today, it's going to be all about how to create a year-long event strategy. I'm super excited to be talking to these two folks, Katie and Sarah. Sarah's actually across at least my pond, the Atlantic Ocean. She's in London. Katie's in Indianapolis. How you folks doing? Katie, what's going on?
Feeling good. Thanks for having us today.
Oh, thanks for coming. Sarah, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Mark. Glad to be here.
Oh, so glad to have you both there. Give them some love, folks. Let's use those emojis. Let's get it going. Let's ask the question of the day before we get into the content, before we go show some slides. I'm going to pull up a poll. This is the question. We were just talking about this backstage before you all joined. And if you need to scroll down a little bit on your screen to see the whole question, just put your mouse over the answers and you can scroll down to vote. But how many events do you host annually? So, Sarah, I'm going to start with you. How many events have you done so far this year and are planning to do for the rest of the year? What do you think? What's the number?
Honestly, it's so many. I can't even count at this point. But we did 45 different, either in-person, virtual, chattel, all kinds of events. I think we did 45 different events in Q2 alone. So we're probably tracking close to the 100 mark for the entire year. Which is probably pretty rare for a small startup like Hunters.
It's amazing. We'll talk about Hunters in a moment. 100 events in a year, folks. You're getting a lot of wows. A lot of people are saying that's incredible. How about you, Katie? And please, folks, go vote. What's your plan for the year, Katie? How many events?
We'll probably get to about 30 this year, a mixture of in-person, virtual webinars, and then we've got our user conference coming up in October, which I'm really excited to have in person finally after 3 years.
That's going to be incredible. Cannot wait. We'll do an intro on you and Seismic in a second. So look at this. Less than 5, 22%. Still very respectable. Like five events. That's still a lot of events. 5 to 10, 11 to 25. But 36%, 13 votes right now, more than 25. I mean, if you think about that, that's, what is that? 2 to 3 a month, right? That's a lot of events. I'm going to keep this open. If you guys want to go to the poll section, keep voting. I'm just going to take it off the stage and let's get into some of the content though today. We have three great sections to talk about during today's event. During the second section, we're going to do a breakout. So we're going to go into three different breakout rooms and each of us will lead a discussion about a deeper topic related to how to create a year-round event strategy. Let me pull up the slides, though, to do some intros, get this party started officially. Here we go. You all should be able to see my screen now, that beautiful invention slide. So to start, let's do some official intros. Katie, let's do an intro. Senior Director, Global Events and Campaigns. That's interesting, actually. I'll kind of dig into your title for a second because we're talking about go-to-market strategy. So yeah. Senior Director, Global Events and Campaigns at Seismic. Tell us more about Seismic. Tell us more about that role you have, though. That's a really interesting title.
Yeah. So Seismic, we sell sales enablement software. I've been there for about a year after being acquired by Lessonly. Lessonly was acquired by Seismic a year ago. I was at Lessonly for 4 years, set up their event strategy there and their user conference. Now at Seismic, I work with our global offices and we do all of our trade shows, user conference, field marketing events, webinars all fall under me. So we work really closely with the campaigns team to build that go-to-market strategy with events included in that.
I mean, it sounds like you're the perfect guest for today's conversation. Thanks again for coming.
Yeah.
Love it. And Sarah, another, you know, head of demand gen and field marketing. I do see those things, you know, tied together often, you know, but Hunter's is a fast growing company. So you got two pretty significant roles going on at the same time, it sounds like. I mean, tell us more about Hunter's and what your job entails.
Sure. So in terms of my career so far, I've worked for this is my third startup, and I've kind of got myself into this position where I join startups at a very early stage as initially a first demand generation hire. And then I also build up the field marketing function, which involves doing a lot of the work myself. And then once we have a little bit of repeatability, I usually have the honor and privilege of hiring more people to my team. So hired three field marketing managers in the past year, two in North America, one in Europe. They're all fantastic. And together we are doing a huge amount of work in collaboration with, you know, content marketing, product marketing. I think that the huge benefit of working for a startup is you get to really broaden your skill set and do a lot of different things. So everyone's getting that experience and exposure, and then we'll hopefully be able to figure out, you know, areas where people want to specialize afterwards.
Incredible. And like you said, you're doing 45 events in Q2. And we're going to talk, by the way, because you both mentioned in-person, online, virtual, maybe even hybrid. We'll talk more about that today. This is going to be a conversation that spans all those different types of events. And I think we might even hit upon maybe the internal aspect a little bit. I mean, I know, Katie, you have an internal event coming up that your team runs and an external event, right?
Yeah, we do. We've got a 1,200 person in-person event in 2 weeks and then another 1,000 person event 6 weeks later. So we're in the thick of it.
That's crazy. I have a lot of empathy for you. We've done something similar in past companies. It's courageous, to say the least. It's fun, though, at the same time, right? The whole company kind of comes together, bonds. It's good. Yeah. So let's talk about that, though. Yeah, let's talk about it. How does events fit into your go-to-market strategy? This is an interesting question because, you know, you guys can take it in a number of different directions. So I'm super interested to see how you take this question. So folks, when you have questions, throw them in the chat or the Q&A. If you have a really, you know, interesting question, you're brave, you want to come on stage, just raise your hand. We'll bring you on stage. But I want to start with you, Sarah. How would you answer this question? That how do events fit into Hunter's go-to-market strategy? Super curious to know your answer.
Yeah, so I'll start by saying this is the first time I've worked in cybersecurity, which is a very event-driven industry. You know, any marketer that works in cybersecurity, you're getting an influx of, can we do this event? From, you know, your sales team, your partner team, your channel team, everyone within the company. And then you're also getting it from different vendors. Like, there are so many events in cybersecurity. So that was a good starting point for us, especially when I joined early days where we didn't have a solidified, you know, message in terms of like, what are we selling and what are our value propositions? So as we built up the value prop for Hunter's and doing all of that messaging and product marketing work, we were also able to do key events in our industry to figure out, you know, what's working from a results perspective, but also get that immediate in-person feedback on, you know, what our booth looks like, our message, does this resonate, does it make sense, how are our, you know, internal people speaking about the company and the product in person. So events played a really critical role there in the beginning, and I think we're spoiled for choice with how many events we could possibly do in our industry. So it's more of a case of like, how can we pick, you know, not every event underneath the sun and try and focus on the ones that are best for our business so that we're not just all spending all of our time on events, but we're also balancing it out with other activities too.
I mean, that's super smart, quality over quantity. And I would assume it was mostly an all company or close to all company, you know, type of experience when it's that early stage, right? Everyone's kind of helping out with the event.
100%. And sometimes it's more region specific. But the goal is really that it's not just the people who have events as part of their title or their job description that are owning the event strategy. It's very much, you know, sharing that ownership with everyone at Hunter's and making people really feel like they're part of the fun, but also that they're sharing the kind of responsibility to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, it's a special moment. I love that. It helps with company culture, to your point, like brings the team together. I love that. So same question to you, Katie. How does events fit into the go-to-market strategy of Seismic?
Yeah, I think it's a little different since we're bigger and our brand is out there and it's known. So I look at trade shows as brand awareness more than I do demand gen, just to show that we're out there. But I think that when you look at webinars and virtual events, that's your bread and butter of how to pull that into the go-to-market strategy. I think it's important to do events like this, where you can put together a series and show that you're a thought leader, and then being able to tie it to campaigns. So we work really closely with our go-to-market team on what events that will drive the message that they're trying to get across through that campaign. And it's just one of the different channels that we use in our campaign strategy.
Follow on to you, and Sarah, please answer this as well. When it comes to working with the sales team, account management, sales, account executive, it could be pre-sale and post-sale. How do you approach that? Because when you say go to market, right, it's like truly using events as a way to acquire, retain, grow customers. How does that work at Seismic? You know, give some maybe some tips on what people can do that you've seen to be successful from maybe an account executive perspective.
Yeah, I think that relationship is so important. And I think it comes from the top down. So meeting with those sales leaders and getting their buy-in right away is really important. We also have a robust field marketing event strategy where we go in and we give options to the AEs to say, here are three different events you can do this quarter, pick one. And that gives them buy-in and allows them to feel like they're making the decision and gets them more excited about those events. So I think the more you can bring them in to the decision-making, the better. I kind of equate it to parenting, where you give them choices instead of just say, like, here's $10,000, tell us what event you want. You say, here are three choices. But I think that even just giving them that ability to make decisions really helps. And the buy-in is what's necessary to get them on board.
Sarah, please, what do you find to be successful? Yeah, either from, you know, post-sale, pre-sale, anything in between.
Building on what Katie said, I think in terms of being a much smaller company, you have the advantage of being able to do the unscalable things. And so in terms of working with sales reps and, you know, selling large enterprise deals, we know that we need to kind of go the extra mile in terms of special events that we do with like VIP prospects. So we look at, you know, really interesting events. Like, we have a sales rep taking prospects to the US Open this week, the tennis in New York, which, you know, someone on my team has organized and worked with the salesperson to make sure, okay, if we get the tickets, you know, this is the type of person from the type of company that we want to participate in this event. And so we're trying to layer in those things, because we know as a startup, you know, competing with huge companies with massive budgets, we need to be very smart, very agile, very creative. So we're trying to do those things that we would see as going the extra mile as well.
Great example. We got a question actually from Sergeant. Does consumer gifting rewarding play a role in the success of an event from an engagement standpoint? What's your take, Katie, on that?
I think that yes, definitely. I think the more that you can create an experience, the better. We partner with a direct mail solution. We use Postal. We love them. And I think that anytime that you can bring any kind of gifting into your event experience, whether you're on site and you can add some experiential touches that have to go with it. For example, we did a cooking class when I was at Lessonly, we had the Lessonly Llama. We made aprons that had the llama on them, and just like bring in those little touches that they can take home. I think that's really important. And then on the virtual event side, we have done some wine tasting. We're doing some olive oil and balsamic vinegar tasting. And so with that, they're getting some good quality products that they can use at home that isn't branded and it's not going to sit and get dust. They'll actually use it. And so I think that that goes a long way, and that gets a lot of buy-in too, because when you're sending them something, they're more likely to actually show for those events.
How do you create a moment when people remember something, right? They you know, both in the moment, but then after the fact too.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I like that. So Sarah, you said you're doing 45 events in Q2. You did 45 events. How do you plan your events plus go to market? You know, and I want you, Katie, to chime in on this as well. But how do you plan that? Like, how do you do 6 months in advance, 12 months? Like, what are the pro tips? Like, that's crazy.
I think the disclaimer to get out there is, you know, because of the pandemic and the way that the calendar worked, you know, we had a lot of things that were either pushed from last year into Q2 of this year, or things that were kind of pulled forward that had to happen in a window which was after the winter and before the summer. And so it was essentially all hands on deck, not just for me and my team, but everyone in the company. I think there isn't, you know, an executive or a sales engineer who didn't participate in events during that period. So, you know, to answer your question, I think we start with the major events in our industry, and then we layer in, you know, the specific, you know, regional events, the partner events, you know, and you're talking things like golf events, which don't take a huge amount of setup and coordination from my team, versus something like a massive trade show, like we had RSA conference in the security industry, which is a very big trade show in the Moscone Center in San Francisco, which took, you know, a lot more time, effort, and coordination. And then there are, you know, digital events, webinar type things. We do LinkedIn Live events. We find that our you know, audience find that easy to kind of attend without having to give a lot of information or reveal who they are. So all of those things did add up to that number, which is kind of frightening. But at the time, we were just in execution mode and knew that, you know, we had a window of time where things needed to get done. And then the rest of the year, hopefully, would be a lot easier.
Makes total sense. Work your way from top to bottom, basically. Pick the big ones and then kind of go through that motion of, like, what's the audience with the right event experience, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, Katie, do you take a similar approach? Do you guys have like more like 12 month, 18 month planning? Do you tie it to the product launch roadmap at all? I've seen that in past companies, right? When you launch products, what do you do?
Yeah. Similarly, we look at the full year whenever we are planning for the year. And I look at the big buckets of what trade shows do we need to be at? What partner shows do we need to be at? Because that's where most of my money goes. And then prioritize that way. And for us, looking at which audiences we want to hit. So financial services is a big audience for us. That's about 40% of our business. So I was really keen on making sure that we were at financial services conferences this year, and that's where we invested our money. So really seeing where the business is going and who they want to target helped us decide what events to do there. And then we sprinkled in, we have a set number of field marketing events per quarter that we do. So those are decided quarterly. And then the webinars, virtual events, product launch events, those things come along as the campaigns are being planned. So that's a little bit more reactive. And then our user conference, we plan 12 to 18 months in advance, ideally 12. So a lot of times it's a little bit sooner than that, but yeah, it's great. But then you can, when you know when that user conference is happening, you can tie in your product launch campaigns to that, and you can tie in your webinars to that, and really build like a red thread through your event strategy of theming and just lining up your CTAs to drive business.
Your point about theming and red threads is so spot on. Like that's something that I feel like every event marketer, you know, marketing leader wants to do, but if like another team's not in sync, the product team's not in sync, yeah, it's going to be hard, right? If you don't think long enough in advance, like, well, we can't do that then. So love that approach. Also, you hit upon the fact that, hey, make sure you understand your ideal customer profile, understand the accounts you're trying to sign up, the buyer personas you're going after. You both talked about this, and tie your event strategy to that, right? So what is the business's overall go-to-market strategy? So if your business has a chief operating officer, you know, a CFO, of course, right? We kind of joked about this. You got to get close to your CFO. How is the business trying to generate revenue and grow its revenue through its existing customers? Looking at it from that lens, super important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to your point about growing through existing customers, that's a whole other arm, whether that sits on the events team or that sits on the customer marketing team. It's important to engage your customers in these events as well and have customer specific events. I know that's something that we do is we do field marketing events for our customers to help with upsell, because that's a big part of our business as well. So I think it's important not to forget the customer piece when you're doing your event strategy.
We're going to transition into that next section right now. But Sarah, did you have anything to add before we make that transition?
I was going to say, like, my first thought when Katie mentioned that, I was like, you know, I'd love to have a customer marketing team that's kind of, you know, bigger company goals. But right now in my current team, we do have some, you know, two people who share the responsibility of customer marketing in partnership with the customer success team. And they do a fantastic job of like road mapping from the beginning, like what are the events that we're going to participate in? And then what are the opportunities that our customers would have for speaking at these events, which is extremely beneficial for us, we know, but it's also very beneficial for those customers, right? Because they're doing cutting edge work and they want to, you know, speak at certain conferences and you know, we will help them, you know, get there and look after them to kind of take that platform. So it's equally beneficial for us and for them. But I think the thing that we have figured out is you need to give them a lot of lead time in terms of like beginning of the year, sitting down with the customer. This is what we're going to participate in. These are the opportunities that you would have. Let us know what you're interested in.
Could not have said it better myself. Like intentional planning. I love it. Yeah. With the customer and with your teams. So let's make a pivot. As I make this pivot, I'm going to publish another poll. So let's do this right now. Let me actually show this on the stage as well. So again, if you can't see all the answers, just scroll down in the poll itself and you can see them all. Multi-choice. What are you trying to achieve with your current event marketing strategy? And it's very clear, Katie and Sarah, that like your event strategy is all about growth. How do you use events to grow the business's revenue, its brand, its reach, its impact? So we want to know, like, from all of you folks, like, you know, joining this conversation today, multi-choice, you can select more than one thing. What are you folks trying to do? We're trying to see what's the clear winner right here. Customer engagement, expansion, retention. It's pretty high up there. It's like, you know, there's like a three-way tie almost. Super interesting. Let's keep this going. So Katie, just a quick thing as we finish this poll out. With Seismic's big user conference, I think you called it, coming up. Yeah. What is the objective, the primary objective of that user conference?
Honestly, the primary objective is to bring everybody together and get them united around Seismic. So to me, brand experience trumps everything. Don't ask my executives because they'll say product does. But I think that there's a good balance there of being able to give them an incredible brand experience to where they want more. And they're not just bought into the product. They're brought into your brand. They're bought into your mission and vision. So for me, user conferences you're able to actually live that and feel that. And that brings just another dimension to the relationship. And of course, pipeline and upsell is really the number one measurable metric, but I'm very passionate about the brand experience.
No, I love it. I love it. Let's pivot. We'll keep that poll going for a little bit, but let's pivot to the second section because Nikki has a question in the Q&A. The question is quite interesting. You almost like teed me up for what I'm going to show next and what we're going to talk about next, which is this idea of event-led growth. And the other thing I'll say as I pull this up, you both have a different definition of events, in my opinion. You have a definition of events, which is a moment when you get people to join together. Because you were talking about webinars, golf, tennis, dinners, balsamic tastings. That sounds delicious, actually. I mean, all these different things. It's just getting people to join together. And that's something that we actually believe here at AirMeet as well. It's just about joining people together. So that's very interesting. So this question, how do you visualize your year-long strategy? We're going to show you this visual right now. It's something that I used in my past company, Drift. It sounds like both Hunters and Seismic is using it. And we really want to, you know, paint this picture because we all believe, and we hope you folks are feeling it, that the events is not just about this one a year annual summit. It's not just about your user conference. It's a way to really discover, engage, and grow your customers through getting them together. That whole idea, like I was just talking about, join together. So we're going to do the breakout rooms in about 5-6 minutes just to make sure we stay on time. But I want to first, before we go to the breakout rooms, and Katie is going to lead the engage room, Sarah is going to lead the discover room, I'm going to lead the grow room. I want Sarah and Katie, I'll start with you, Sarah, because you're doing discover, to talk about how do you folks use events and what types of events to discover new leads and prospects. But also on the inverse of that, think about this, folks. How do you use events to get them to discover your brand, your business? It goes both ways, right? We tried to be symbiotic when we came up with these verbs. So Sarah, yeah, kick us off. What do you do during this discover phase of using events to grow revenue and customer loyalty?
Sure. I think like what you touched on before in terms of like people have different definitions of what events are and what their purpose is. I think we see them having two different purposes at Hunters, where on one side it's the relationship building, like you mentioned, Mark, like the coffee tasting or the whiskey tasting or the dinners, and like really making sure that our sales people are seen as more of like trusted advisors, and that they're building relationships first before trying to, you know, work with enterprise buyers. And so, you know, making sure that they're not coming in with a hard sell is really important. And then on the other side, you know, we want to make sure that we're providing a lot of content that actually really helps people become better at their jobs. Because at the end of the day, I think that's the reason why all of us are in, you know, software sales and marketing, is to make sure that people within these companies can use your solution, and then we'll help you kind of craft the narrative of how you're using that solution to benefit your business, and then you will be able to grow within your career path. So they're like the two objectives in terms of what we're trying to do with events. And then if you want to get really specific, we're looking at fitting certain criteria of, you know, selling to a certain persona in a certain industry, certain company size. So those things, we need to make sure that those people are going to be at the event, if it's in person, or if it's digital, that we're making sure that the people, you know, within that criteria, they'll care about the subject that we're covering, and that we can also use paid, you know, like flexing the demand gen skills to target those people and try and make sure that they know that this event is happening and that they can sign up if they're interested.
I always say an event is half content, but now more than ever, especially digitally, but 100% in person, it's connection. So like, I think you kind of nailed that. Like, absolutely, it's content and connection. So you get them to discover how you can help them. You maybe even help them discover more about their problem and how they could solve it. Discover what makes you so unique and different and special. It's amazing. They're getting pulled into this awesome experience. Now, how do you continue to engage them, Katie? What do you recommend there? What have you seen done?
That's where we pull in our field marketing events. So that's where we do the coffee tasting, beer tasting, wine tasting type of events, because we pull in a couple customers and then prospects of similar use cases, and then they can have the conversation together. So just like Sarah said, it's not about the product. It's not about a hard sell. It's all about getting them to talk to each other and learn from each other and giving them a safe space to ask questions. And that's where they build their affinity for your brand and want to buy the product as well.
I like how you use the term safe space. It, I mean, a lot of this, right? Marketing is just like psychology. A lot of it is, right? At the end of the day. So you're just trying to create a sense of belonging through these events almost, right?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if we could ever measure that as marketers, right? Like how much do you feel like you belong to this brand or community? I don't know. I've never seen that question.
That would be awesome. It would help me with my metrics to be able to measure the impact of events a little bit more.
We got people saying brand affinity, social selling. Yeah. We got a lot of love coming for that. That's interesting. Maybe we got to lean into that. All right, let's do the breakouts. This is just 10 minutes. You can just listen. You don't have to engage. Katie, Sarah, and I are ready to kind of give some examples of events we've done in the past to help you discover, engage, and grow your customers. Just, you know, okay, no pressure. But you're going to go into a breakout room. It's going to feel like Zoom. You can do things in the chat. You could just go off camera, go off mute. We're going to do for 10 minutes, and then we're going to wrap it up with 10 more minutes about how to really nail the post-event strategy when it comes to your go-to-market. We've talked a little bit about how to bring events together from one event to another event, how to tie that into larger brand messaging, campaigns, product launches, etc. We'll hit on that in a lot more after these breakout rooms. But let's do the breakout rooms. You are able to hop in between. So if you get put into one of the breakout rooms, you're like, I don't want to talk to Mark and Grow. I want to talk to Katie about this or Sarah about that. You can leave and you can join those other breakout rooms. 10 minutes. We're going to do this right now. It should be seamless. And we'll see you again, like I said, in 10 minutes. So the folks in Airme are going to help. All right, I have to ask, what do people think about that? What was that experience like for everyone? Katie, what do you think?
I thought it was great. It was awesome just to get to talk to everybody, and it's a nice break in the event. I might steal it for some of our events moving forward.
Okay, good, good. We haven't done this often. This is a new feature, number one, and we've done this maybe once or twice, so appreciate that. Sarah, what did you think? Honest, like, was it technically okay? Like, how did it work?
Kind of afraid and dreading it, but it actually was great. I appreciate having Tanvi as my MC, and I was able to put my wonderful teammate Kelly in the spot as well to give more of an insight into the work she's doing on our team. So yeah, I think it was good overall.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I feel like we got a few ways to make this even better. Like, yeah, you have some plants, you have someone to help you like kind of facilitate it if you're the host of the event. It's good feedback. Let us know what you folks think too. Like, please let us know in the chat. Thank you for participating. Good to hear, Brian. Awesome. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Last section. And then if you want to hang out a little bit after the top of the hour, go to the Fluid Space. A few of us will be hanging out in the Fluid Space. Check it out in the agenda, the view schedule thing. But post-event. You got like 90 days, right? It's like post-event, 90 days. What's the pipeline number at? What's the revenue at? So when you think about go-to-market and all of these different types of events we've talked about, what are you doing? I'll start with the bigger events, the ones that are not like the smaller field events, but for these big events you do that might happen once or twice a year that you host, not third party, the ones you host. What are you doing after the event? I'll start with you, Katie, and then I'll go to you, Sarah.
Yeah, I think for us, it's making sure you get that event survey in there. I saw someone in the chat ask about NPS. I think that's a really important measurement for your events, but then also the follow-up, you should have an event strategy post your event too of, like, is there a webinar series that they can follow up on? I know for Shift, we're looking at maybe some fast follow events that we can invite them to right away. So that way they can deepen what they learned and just be reminded of what they learned at Shift. So having those CTAs in that follow up is really important. And for the events for prospects, it's working with the AEs to make sure that they have the messaging that they need to hit them right away with a, what did you think? And next steps to make sure that movement happens pretty soon after the event.
Just a quick one on that before Sarah, you chime in with the AE piece and the enablement. How much of that, of course, it happens a little bit before the event, but like how much, you know, before the event does that happen? Who does that? Like kind of tactically, what do you guys do?
We are lockstep with our sales leaders and our sales enablement team in making sure that our AEs have what they need ahead of time. So a lot of times when we're preparing for an event, we'll send them a template to say like, hey, look at what your prospect might be interested in and fill this out and suggest some sessions for them. So we're giving them resources to help enhance their prospects' experience at the event.
That's a great tip. You got some thumbs up on that one. People liking that. Sarah, Katie, sorry. They're liking that. Sarah, thoughts on the big event? How do you follow up? What do you do? Do you reuse the content? What's going on?
We haven't done any big events that we've hosted ourselves at Hunters yet because we're still a small company and it's a big endeavor. It's something our CMO is pushing for, you know, us to host a user conference. And I actually did it with her. We worked at our previous company. And I think, you know, the thing in terms of post-event, which worked really, really well, was using the event. You know, a huge amount of work goes into getting the speakers, getting the content, filming, producing everything. I think that should be your content strategy for the following year. Mm-hmm. Like you really should be using, repurposing those sessions. Like if your conference is in person, like probably the majority of your audience isn't going to be able to attend in person, right? It's probably like wrong time or wrong place or, you know, can't travel for whatever reason. So you really should be assuming that most of your audience isn't going to either attend or consume the content. You know, we've been to conferences where we attend, but we still don't get to take in a lot of the sessions we're interested in. So how are you going to take that content and repurpose it throughout the year, I think is something that we probably, you know, underestimate the power of that as marketers.
At Drift and Airmeet, the events and content team is the same team. It's one overall team, one leader. We did that on purpose. So I ran events, community, content, brands, creative at Drift. It was all about demand creation. And we had a very, very similar setup at Airmeet. It was very purposefully done. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, Sarah. And I'm going to take this into a quick divergence because you made me think of something. So sorry, this is going to be a little off the cuff, but I want from both of you to know the answer. Is hybrid, when you say hybrid event, is that one event or two events?
The work, it's two. It is planning. It's two events in one, because you're planning like essentially two experiences, trying to find where they meet together, but it takes double the amount of work. But I think it depends on how you want to do your content strategy. So for Yellowship, what we did back in the fall last year is we pre-recorded all of our breakout sessions, and then we were going to have the breakout speakers do them live in person. Thankfully we did that because we went virtual and we ended up using them anyway. And that was content for us. For Shift, we're just recording all the breakouts on site at the event and then having them on demand afterwards. So it just kind of depends on how robust your virtual piece of the hybrid strategy is. But to your point, I think that hybrid is so important in this day and age now that we can do it. Your reach is so much bigger, and not everyone's going to be able to travel to your event. So it almost makes sense to always do hybrid in some form or fashion, because it's great content that you want to get out to everybody.
We've seen really good examples as well from companies like Salesforce, where I think for Dreamforce last year, they were able to like have, you know, maybe like a small Dreamforce at the time in San Francisco, but then they had these kind of like either like watch parties or kind of regional events at the same time, where, you know, if you're in New York City, they had like a Dreamforce event. I think Metadata did it as well, as part of their conference, where like, just because you can't be at and traveling to like the main conference doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to have like a mini conference experience in your own hometown. And let's face it, it's probably better for, you know, the environment and the economy in some ways, when you think of how expensive it is to fly so many people into San Francisco versus having people who will be able to meet up with one another after the event because they live in the same area. You know, I think it makes perfect sense. And that's probably like the future of a lot of these conferences.
I completely forgot about that fifth way. I think there's like four different ways you could do like hybrid. You all hit on a couple of them, but the fifth way, with doing regional in person, but have a big online summit, digital summit going on. Sixth Sense did that too. It's like field events plus like a big online user conference or summit style.
More work for field marketing teams and marketing teams in general. Katie, I can see it on your face.
Yeah, I was feeling panic when you were just describing that. It's a great experience, but that would take so many resources.
Speaking of resources, like talk about the, we're kind of deviating from post event for a second, but like how many people are part of the core team? And then like, what would you call like your extended team? Like how many people, who's involved? What do you think, Katie?
So at Seismic, we have five on my team. So two are focused on trade shows and our internal events. I have three focused on field marketing, and then we all come together to do Shift. I will tell you, that's not nearly enough. We're all kind of run ragged at this point. So I think the more that we can get, the better. But I think the events, Sarah made this point earlier, it's a team effort. Whether you're in a hunter size company or a seismic size company, you've got the brand team, the content team, the sales team, you're working with finance and legal on contracts. It's a whole company effort to make any event come to life, really.
What do you think, Sarah? Same answer? Something different?
I would say like we also have a fantastic person leading like sales enablement, which is really critical because she can, you know, make sure that when these sales reps and sales engineers show up, that, you know, they're doing a really good job at speaking to people and also demonstrating the product. So I think that's important. And then, you know, probably the most important of all is like the operations team, to make sure that like anything any investment in field events or, you know, any kind of events is maximized, right? By the data getting into the system, you know, from inviting the right people to following up with the right people and then tracking everything and all that goes in between. I think operations is so important too.
It's a great way into my last question, which is, I guess it's two parts. Pipeline revenue. What's the coverage? Is it 5x on pipeline, 3x revenue? Like, what's your current benchmark? What do you think it should be? Does it not matter? I want you both to take a stab at this one. So the ROI, like getting specific with the ROI, what is it? Go ahead, Katie.
I don't have an answer to that question. For me, it's more right now, we're in the brand awareness and pipeline acceleration phase, which is really hard to measure. Mm. So a lot of what we do is very pipeline driven, very attributed to the pipeline driving side of things. And so it's really hard to measure when we don't have an attribution model at Seismic to measure it. So, that's something that we're working on right now on the trade show webinar, side of things. We're really looking at MQLs, leads and lead MQL to opportunity. That's really the metric that we look at there.
That's good to know. That makes total sense. How about you, yeah. Sarah?
At this point in time, you know, being a very early stage startup and trying to, you know, create that efficiency, I think what we're looking at is like the cost to like open an opportunity. So like what's mm-hmm. for every opportunity we create, how are we dividing that between everything we're spending on marketing? And, you know, if it's a number that's eye-watering to us and even more eye-watering to our CEO and VP of finance, you know, that's not good. So we need to make sure we're bringing that down. But I think we're kind of seeing marketing as like one big cost, if you will, or one big investment, because I don't think it's really fair to evaluate things on a one-off basis. Because if you think of something like a big trade show, you know, something third party that you participate in every year, it can be very, very hard, like Katie said, on the attribution. You know, they may have seen us at a trade show, but they didn't come and engage with us at all. So we have no tracking there. Mm-hmm. Or it could be a coworker of theirs who saw us in the distance, that we didn't scan, but they came back and said, hey, you need to check out this company. And we didn't capture that information. We try to overcome that with our demo request form on our website, which has like, how did you hear about us? As well as tracking through campaigns, but like not everything is going to be tracked. And I personally don't want to work with a marketing team that insists on everything being tracked, because then you kind of lose this art, and then you're just, marketing is just a science. And, you know, everyone here is, you know, probably a marketer because you love the art, you know, as much as you love the science.
Who supports that? Throw some emojis out there. Who supports that? That's a great statement. Okay. One last final question, because we have like 2 minutes left. I promise this is it. Really quickly, what's the percentage of events that make up your marketing kind of go to market? Like, out of all the things you do, events take this percentage of it. Katie, and you can go first.
From a time perspective or from a budgeting perspective?
Great, great follow-on question. Budgeting.
Oh, budgeting. I joke that I spend the most money on the marketing team because events are just expensive. I don't know, probably 10-15%, I'm guessing.
Okay. And on time, though. I want you to answer both. I was going to do both.
Time. I mean, I think it's probably, again, equal 10 to 15% of what we do. Okay. I wish I had more budget. I think it's pretty equal of that's how they probably decide what the budget is for us.
Okay. 10 to 15%. I'm actually a little surprised by that. This is interesting. I thought it'd be a little bit higher. Okay. Okay. That's interesting. That's cool. It's cool. How about you, Sarah?
I would say this year it's probably like 50% is events, you know, in terms of the budget, and then probably half of our time has been spent on events. But what I'm trying to get the team to think about is like, an event doesn't mean everyone has to be there in person. Like, we can do a lot of digital events like this and weave them into the in-person, and also having things that we can repeat. You know, we talked a lot about themes and how important that is. I think if you can scale things without compromising the experience where it feels scaled because it's predictable or boring or any of those words we never want associated with our events. I think if you can strike that balance where, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel every single time, I think that's what we're striving for next year, is probably to do fewer in-person events, maximize the amount we can do digitally, knowing that, you know, a lot of people still aren't going to get out there and engage with us in person just because of the nature of the world, and trying to strike that happy medium in between.
Well said. I have to say, round of applause, have to say, this has been an amazing conversation. Look at all this love. Look at all this love for, I mean, both deserve it. Amazing, amazing leaders doing amazing things at two awesome companies. You got to check out these two companies. Have to check them out. I got to give, you know, just a quick plug for Seismic, because they have great content around sales engagement, sales enablement, you know, all things sales and getting better at sales. So plug for them. Katie, Sarah, thank you so much. Thank you so much. You know, we greatly appreciate it. And best of luck with all of your future events for the rest of the year.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
The Army team, and thanks for everyone for signing up and attending today.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. See you at the next Eventions in 2 weeks. It's going to be about podcasting and events. Podcasting and events. They go together? Yes, they do. See you at the next one. Stop by the Fluid Space if you want to hang out for another 10-15 minutes. Just go to the view schedule and you'll check it out right there. See ya.